Good morning. Welcome to the Phil Only podcast for today. And this is what we do every Monday, and it's a break for both of us, probably. For me, especially, because I can at least one day out of the week do our show without going into a multitude of characters and lots of different voices. And this past weekend, every weekend during the football season when we're doing the Milwaukee Lion games, we have this one bit, it's one aspect to our show called the Milwaukee Lions. It's a real it's a football team that we create, and we create the games, and we actually have a league that we have the Lions a part of, and we actually play the other games so that it's as close to reality as we possibly can keep it. But then there's the game that we do, and I say we, it's basically me, but you know, I have some support in terms of getting it on the website and all this stuff. So anyway, doing that game is about a 6-hour operation of doing it and then editing it and then, you know, all that stuff. Man, I got done with it on, let's see, Saturday night I got done with it around, we went out to dinner, Lauren and I, and I came back and I finished editing it about midnight, something like that. It wasn't that bad of a, it's not that bad if you don't have anything to do the next day, which is Sunday, but we wanted to make sure we dropped the game on Sunday. But what I did wind up with was a case of I had a hoarse throat from, why am I bringing all this up? Oh, I know, giving the old throat a break. So yeah, it's, sometimes it's a good thing to do. It's fun to do on Monday, and it's particularly fun, and this is going to sound maybe goofy to you, but I like getting up early in the morning and doing it. I discovered something that is really strange, and it's the following thing. The best energy that I have for doing the work that I do is in the morning, because I don't really know what I'm doing. You know, if you want to be just moment to moment in how you're putting on a show or something, or, you know, in this case, doing a podcast, radio show, performance kind of a thing, and I do a most of the time a really stylized thing, this is a great time of day because I'm not thinking too much and I'm just, you know, one foot in front of the other. So that's what we're going to do here this morning, as we've done for the last few weeks. And like I said, our Monday-only show is a bit of an experiment, and we'll continue with it as long as it's fun and there isn't a wholesale revolt on the part of the listeners and we start losing money and we start losing business and we have to shut down, you know, our lives. But until that time occurs, we'll continue with this. So I'm very grateful that you're all with me here today, and I wanted to start off by telling you a little something about our weekend, because Lauren and I had a week ago at the Overlord Annex in Santa Barbara while we're writing a show. She got angry at me for a very good reason, and I won't go into it, but she did. It was a good reason, and I, as I said on my show, I stepped over the line a little bit, and it wasn't anything like, I didn't beat her or anything. It was in the other areas that you may imagine. Nothing too heavy, but just kind of weird enough that she got pretty upset. She got very hurt. And one of the best things that I could have done, I did. And it was a completely new thing for me. And I realized, man, you know, I'm learning some things here in this world. I'm actually figuring some stuff out here. I'm not screwing up anymore. You know, I am, I'm doing a couple of things right. The first thing I did is I didn't get defensive. I didn't make any excuses that much. I let her be pissed off, and I answered her questions, you know, as honestly as I could. And then I just let her go and do whatever she needed to do to stop being angry at me. And she did, you know. What that may be, I don't know. I'm pretty sure she didn't put her head through a wall or anything. Or, you know, she's not that way, but you know, she went off to her apartment for a couple of days, and it was a bummer. And, you know, I don't know, because at my age, I'm starting to think, I've been a bachelor for most of my life. I was married for 10 years, but for most of my life, I've been a bachelor, and I've got all these issues having to do with, like a lot of people do, I got all these issues having to do with love and intimacy and sex and love and all. How does all of that fit together? It may not sound complicated to some of you guys, but for me, and I suspect for a lot of people, it is. But I am not a psychopathic guy. You know, I have a conscience, so I'm not the kind of guy that can necessarily go out and just live the life of a bachelor, going from one woman to the next until the day that I die. Although, you know, some days it sounds pretty good. Maybe I'll listen back to the show today and go, what am I talking about? That's the greatest thing I could possibly imagine. But in truth, it's not really. But I found out two things, and these are the two things that I think I never knew I needed this from a woman, but I did. And the following two things are these. A, maybe for the first time in my life, you know, I can get something back. I'm not saying that women are selfish. I'm saying I picked in my life a lot of women that I took care of. So they didn't really, they were not oriented toward giving so much as they were toward, you know, taking. And so I have a woman in my life now who makes me laugh. And that's the first time that that's ever happened. And then the other thing was that I pretty much needed a female that was not going to berate and punish me for how jacked up and, you know, just messed up I can be sometimes. Because that's something that I've had, you know, in spades, man, starting all the way back with, you know, the very beginning, the first girlfriend, the almighty one herself, Mom. All right. So, and I got that too with Lauren. She did not, once we talked this thing out and once we got this thing squared away and once we got, you know, our, if you'll pardon the expression, we got our shit together on this thing. Then it was just a matter of her kind of going through it. And she had some more questions. She came over on Saturday. She asked me a few more things. I started to get a little tense. She said, now, you know, you said I could ask anything. I said, you don't, you're right. You're right. You can ask me anything. And she didn't hang anything on me. You know, she wasn't angry, man. She wasn't playing the guilt thing. She wasn't telling me what a piece of shit I was. She wasn't saying, well, this isn't the first time you've done that. She wasn't saying, you know, this is just the same behavior. None of that stuff, right? And all of this very, very new for me. And I got to tell you, I'm like very grateful for this, because if there's one guy in this world that can really kick the shit out of me, it's me. You know, I mean, I already do it really well. The fact that I have this woman in my life now who doesn't do that. And also, as I said, she's a genuinely funny person, Lauren is. You know, she's beautiful and she's all of those things that you like. But she's also very generous and makes me laugh. She's a hell of a great comic and she's a good writer. And she's been in the writing end and sort of the producing end of things in her life. But so I'm saying all this stuff to tell you that we spent the whole week apart from each other. And we finally got together on Saturday. That was the kind of reunion we had. And I'll tell you something. It ain't like we haven't had fights. But here's where this is the third thing that I discovered. And all of a sudden you'll lay this on people and you sound like you're just so smart. You know, all of a sudden if you got your eyes open at all in your life, and if you are paying attention at all in your life, you're going to collect a few things, and then you're going to lay these things on people and they'll say, wow, that's, you know, that's pretty smart what you just done said there, Mr. Henry. Well, not really, man. It's just like, I got to tell you, wisdom more than anything else is just the function of having survived a lot of shit. You know, you're not dead. You're still alive. And so people may say you're so wise. No, I'm just, I got through. These other guys didn't. You know, here I am. They're all gone. You know, literally or figuratively, or I don't know. Maybe they were just too dumb. I don't know what happened, you know. And I'm not saying that I'm the only one, but. And one of the things that I found out, and I said this to Lauren early on, you know, when we were just going out, we had a fight. And it was a pretty heavy fight. But it was a good, clean, honest fight. It wasn't a crazy-ass, weird, it wasn't, it was a good, clean, honest, you know, I'm really pissed, and she was pissed, and we had a good, nice fight. But it was also pretty traumatic, because we were angry, and, you know, we didn't want to be that way. The next day I said to her, you know, we were talking, I said, can I suggest something? She said, what? Let's just move. Let's just keep going, man. Let's not talk that shit out. She goes, what do you? I said, let's just. I said, my whole life, man, my whole life, I've talked this bullshit out. And then you talk it out some more. And then, you know, well, this is... And then you adjust your behavior. And then you adjust and adjust and adjust. And then maybe you have to go to couple counseling. Maybe you don't. And then you have another fight. And, you know, the next thing you know, and I still know, I said, the thing that happened to me and the thing that happened in every relationship I was in, I'm suddenly, I don't know which way to move, man, because I put up a barrier here. I put one here. I better not go there. Don't act that way. Uh-oh, don't back up. Don't go forward. All these big stop signs, you know, that you've surrounded yourself with. I said, let's just keep going forward, man. You know, I love you. I think you're great to be with. I don't want to hurt you. You know, I want to be happy. I know I'm not a piece of shit. I know I'm a pretty good guy. I know I'm making mistakes, but I know I'm getting better. I know I'm getting smarter. And she goes, well, you know something? She says, yeah, I think you're right. She said, I believe that about you. And she said, and I'm the same way. She says, you don't think we ought to? I said, I got to tell you something, you know. And I'm like 20 years older than her. So I can say to her, I can tell her what to do, and she has to do it. I'm kidding. But, you know, I'm your elder. No, but I said, yeah, well, that's what I think. And I feel pretty confident in that. I am telling you that I really do. And she said, well, how does that work? I said, well, just fuck it, man. We had an argument, and now we're done, and we're going forward. And that's what we've done. We've had about, in the time we've been together, maybe a little bit over a year, we've had about three fights, three arguments, and we don't talk it out. We don't sit down and, you know, baby, I'm so sorry. And now, this one here that happened a week ago, it was a little bit heavier, and we both agreed. And it just happened that way. I'm going to ask you some questions about this. Yeah. Did this and this and this? Yeah, yeah. How about this and this? No, no. And what about that? No. Well, that doesn't jibe with this, because that... And she was angry, man. And I answered everything, and I didn't sit there and get all pissed off and defensive, because I had effed up, and I was going to deal with this thing straight on, and I wasn't going to be blaming anybody else, and I wasn't going to be blaming her, and I wasn't going to be looking for a place to hide, you know? Just damn well deal with it, because I got to, you know, I don't know about you, man, but I would much prefer in my life to be happy, you know, and have a good time than deal with the fallout from thinking of trying to, you know, screw around and play, you know, cutesy poo with something, and I don't know, just the whole thing we do when we try to protect ourselves, you know. Well, I don't know, why are you asking me those questions? Because you did this. I know, but you know, you're really yelling kind of loud, and I don't think it's cool, and I'm, you know, and then all of a sudden you build up your own little resentments, and you have this nice little reservoir of shit that you want to throw on her, and now all of a sudden you feel all empowered and self-righteous. No. No, not me, man. I'm tired of that utter dishonesty. So that was a little bit heavier, but at the end of the time we talked about this, and it was over and done with, and she was here Saturday. We had a blast. We had a great time. We had a great visit. She's got to go back to her apartment because her cat Poncho, this is another guy I haven't seen in the middle of this mix that I should tell you about. It's a cat. No, he's epileptic, this cat Poncho, this poor guy, man. He's a great guy. He was living here for a while, and then she took him and put him back there in the apartment because she was, you know, pissed at me. So I'm taking my cat, and I'm taking my cat, and I'll never see you again. And then she came over on Saturday. What happened to Poncho? He's had an epileptic seizure. This cat is epileptic. This is the greatest cat in the world. He's like a people cat. He hangs out with people, but I saw him have this seizure once. It was last Christmas, and cats, like dogs, are, you know, they're animals, so they don't know what's happening to them. The good news for a cat and a dog is if they have something like that, they don't sit there sweating it the rest of the day. You know, they're not going, when's the next time am I going to have this epileptic? Man, I had no idea. They're not worried about it. You know, something happened, their brain rebooted, and now they're off eating salmon pate or chasing a bird, and it just doesn't hang them up. So that's the cool part about being an animal. You know, there's no real past or future. There's just now, and that's probably the one great lesson we learned from animals. But I was sitting there reading one night, and all of a sudden I saw he had been on this couch facing the TV set, and I was reading, and Lauren was asleep, And I was just, it was, you know, I don't know, about midnight. And all of a sudden, he jumped up off the couch the way a cat will jump when he sees a moth or when he sees something that he wants to get. You know, a cat will just be at total rest and then suddenly you'll see a moth or a fly. Just boom, he's up in a flash. Poncho was up, jumped over the back of the couch and came down and banged into the sliding glass door, which was to my right, and then just lay there on his side. And when I saw him laying there on his side, I knew exactly what was happening. He was shaken. I think at one point he was even biting the metal rail of the sliding glass door. And, like, you know, I didn't know what else to do but say, Lauren, you know, I called to her and she was up. I just said, it's Poncho, man. So she came and I had this comforter off the couch and I put it and I laid it on him and she just came over and did the only thing you could do is just to sit there and she had her hand on him and she was petting him and he was shaking, man. Like it was just one of those vibrating, shaking kind of things, you know. And I don't think I've ever even seen a human being have a seizure like that. We had a kid in school when I was growing up. I remember we had one kid who had that and a couple times this happened in class. I never did quite see it. You know, it was always, oh, you know, the nun would just, all right, so get the door. Somebody get a towel. And I'd turn around and suddenly there's like 9,000 kids around. And I never could see what was going on. I knew who it was. It was a great guy. His name was Bobby King. He was a good kid, but it just had this thing happening. I'm not really even sure whether they have medicine now that keeps people from having these seizures anymore. But in the 70s, I remember watching television. And it was a big thing that was happening in the 70s. They were saying, you know, like Bobby, anybody remember Bobby Jones from the 76ers? Bobby Jones was a forward. He was a power forward, I think. And he did a series of PSAs, public service announcements for the people with epilepsy, whatever the foundation or association was. And he said, you know, I'm an epileptic. He said, he plays in the NBA and I'm able to control my seizures through medicine, and please don't hold that against anybody, and we can work like anybody else, and we're cool, you know, because I think epileptics had almost like a thing hanging on them for a while that perhaps other maladies, you know, that we now better understand, you know. I think epileptics were viewed at one time as almost like they were crazy or something, you know, or mentally deficient in some way. Why, the man's an epileptic. There's only one thing wrong with Bob. He has seizures. You know. There used to be a word, a lot of you may not know this word. There was a word that was thrown around a lot, and I used to think it was a very interesting word because it had to do with sex. And when I was 10 or 11, you know, that was the fascinating topic. Almost as fascinating as it is to me now. It's way more interesting now, which is kind of sick because it should be, like, dissipating, and it's getting worse. No, but there was a show on called Divorce Court. And Divorce Court has changed over the years. You may be familiar with Divorce Court, but back in the day, it was like, it was almost too real, man. It was pretty weird. I always thought it was like a real Divorce Court, but I found out that Jack Nicholson, as an actor, when he was starting out here in L.A., some of the first work he did was as an extra on Divorce Court. He was making up his own little scenes, he said. So I realized then that, well, obviously it's not real. Divorce Court's bullshit. Although I got to tell you, back then it was pretty good. Because I was just seeing it through the brain of a 10-year-old. Anyway, on Divorce Court, they had this word frigid. And they used to use it all the time. They would say, well, what was wrong with her, Bob? She was, go ahead, you can tell the court she was frigid. Generally, it was the woman who said it, though.
I asked, you know, Steve and I had a problem.
And what was it?
Well, I don't know if I can say that's all right, ma'am. You're in open court. I was told I was frigid.
And frigid meant, oh, she can't have an orgasm. Not, you know, she's with a man who's not very passionate, he's not very loving, he's not very attentive, he's not a guy that has any real feeling for her or any passion for her. That had nothing to do with him. She was frigid, you know, because I guess women were supposed to be as automatic as men. No one explained it to me. That's what I had to figure out on my own at the age of 11. But because I was an extraordinary child, and I was, a gifted child, and when it came to all that pornographic, you know, disgusting stuff, I could figure that out, you know, like 2 seconds, I had it all figured out. So that's why I say, you know, when you're talking about epileptic seizures, that carried a very heavy connotation at one time. An epileptic seizure, it carried this the connotation of it almost, you know, I have to tell you, and I'm trying to be as clear as I can. It was almost like there's something really wrong, like you're crazy. Like you're not, it's not even just being perhaps developmentally disabled or something physical. No, you got some insanity there if you're falling on the ground and you're flopping around. And very uncharitable view, I think, of the situation. But that's what happened to Poncho this past week. And Lauren said to me, I said, what happened? Should Poncho have another seizure? I said, oh, that poor guy, what happened? I guess he was flying all over the damned apartment, man, and really going through some changes, you know. And but then what happens to him is, as I said, I saw it happening in front of my eyes last Christmas. He starts shaking. Then he sits up, and he looks from one side, and then he looks to the other side. And then he looks from one side. He literally is looking back and forth. I don't know what he's seeing. I don't think he's trying to focus. His eyes are wide open. Those pupils are just bam, big black eyes. He's looking back and forth. He's doing a little bit of growling, and he's sort of looking back and forth. And then he will, and this is Lauren told me what would happen, he will then stop. He'll get up. His tail will be straight up in the air. He'll be feeling good, and he goes right back to being a cat. And that's exactly what happened. He was going back and forth. Then he suddenly looked at me. He got out from underneath the blanket, and he walked over to me with his tail up, and he was cool. And then the only other thing that happens is he's starved. I mean, he is famished. So he had this bag of dehydrated salmon. It was little chunks of dehydrated salmon that he flips out for, and we dumped this whole bag onto a plate. I mean, we weren't even doling this stuff out. We just, boom, laid a whole bag of this stuff on him and let him just chow down. And this dude, he almost plowed completely through this bag. He was so hungry. It's a pretty amazing thing to see. And I don't know whether they're burning up a lot of energy when that happens. It's not fatal. And the veterinarian told Lauren, said, you know, every 3 months, and he gets medicine, because I've had to put it down his gullet when she's not around. I don't know what it is, but it's some kind of a sedative that works well in the little brain of a cat. But the doctor said, you know, he's going to have them. Hopefully they'll spread out, and they will be less frequent, and they won't be as long. And I would say that it lasts about 30, 40 seconds. I don't mean to take up all this time. It's sort of telling you about a good old Poncho, because he factored into the kind of a week that Lauren had, you know. But, you know, he's a good guy, man. Cats are funny, man. Animals are funny, but cats particularly are funny. And this guy, he hangs out with her like she's, well, she is. She's like his, she is his savior. And he's her, you know, whatever. We're always kidding about the fact that they're laying there in the moonlight together. I don't want to say anything. Anyway, welcome here to our Monday podcast. This is The Phil Only. And at this particular juncture, I would like very much to tell you about our subscription business, to tell you about supporting our podcast. Because we have, I would say that what we do here is like a magazine. It's like a weekly, only we do a daily magazine, and we do load up our archives with all kinds of shows. We have shows that go back many, many years, almost 20 years now. We have the Milwaukee Lion archive that I was telling you about. We do all those games new. We have our classic podcasts that we put together. We have the pre-show that we do, which we actually, not only do we do part of the podcast of the pre-show, but we also videocast it, so you can see it as well as listen to it. I don't know to what extent you want to see that, but sometimes it's interesting. And we try to keep it really cool looking, because we have the Pacific Ocean behind us here on camera 6, so you can see the El Pacifico that's roiling behind me. And many, many other things, including old television interviews and radio interviews and TV shows that we've done, are all there at philhenryshow.com. And you can get a Backstage Pass subscription for a year. You can get one for a month. But in supporting the podcast, you're supporting the show and the efforts that are good and diligent efforts every day to bring to you the quality entertainment that I know you've come to understand and expect here from all of us to all of you. Thank you. The Lions dropped yesterday, so if you're into that, listen to Jack I. Gagner because it was a pretty heavy game. Jack was kicked off the booth because he said that Art Numbnuts was a crooked F-U-C-K. He also said, when they said, you know, the L.A. Tan have fans too, you should be nice to them, Jack, he said F-U-C-K them. And it all went back to the league office, and it was pretty interesting. So then they brought in some hillbilly to do the game, and there was a fist fight. I can't go into it much more than that because feelings will be hurt. I'm kidding. But the fact is, check it out if, you, if you're of a mind over at philhendryshow.com. And while you're there, get a backstage pass and support our show. And we dig that. We appreciate it. And we love you for that. So I had, as I jumped into the show today, this is the Phil Only Show. One of the things that I have to do today is go out to, I got to go into town because I do a voiceover work and I need to go in and audition because they wanted me to come into audition. And generally I can do it from here. I can do a remote audition or do an MP3 audition from the studio, but they need me to go into town. And my brother Dara has been sick. I don't know if I, how much of that I've related to you guys. I talked to my subscribers. We do a chat on Friday night about that. We do it just a general chat. But I do talk to them about it. I don't know if I've discussed that on the show here or not, but Dara has, my brother Dara is a guy, he's a guy, you know, he's a good guy. He was my older brother and still is, and he never won't be my older brother, because as far as I know, I can't get older than him now. He's always going to be older. And he, since I was a little kid, he was much older. Dara's 9 years older than me. So by the time I got to be a little kid, Dara was on his way out, and he was on his way to the Navy. To the United States Navy he went, and he didn't have an easy life, man. My old man was on him, like, all the time. My father was a very unfair guy to him, and I saw it. I just saw this happen to him. But the good thing about Dara is he was brought into this world. He had a pretty good... I would say that Dara had more than his fair share of good attributes. He was a good-looking guy. He had has a great mind. He was funnier than hell. People liked him. And you know, he didn't have a half-bad family. I mean, my parents were kind of jacked up a little bit, but hey, whose aren't? But my father was not fair with him. I don't know what my old man's problem was. I mean, we still talk about it today, what the hell that guy's trouble was. I don't know what it was. I think it, excuse me, I think it had to do with my old man being adopted. He, my father went through his life hung up about all kinds of shit from when he was a kid, you know. If he told me one time, he told me a million times about, you know, I didn't have it easy as a kid. Well, what happened, Dad? You know, my mother took her purse and hit me on a train. Uh-huh. I've heard that one, Dad. Is there anything else that happened? See, this was the big thing that he kept bringing up. He got hit with a purse on a train. Yeah, I so what else? Well, yeah, I mean, isn't that an, you know. But... compared to the shit that you kind of... I mean, my father was not physically abusive to me or to my sisters, as far as I know. But my brother, I think he did belt him around. I don't mean with a fist. I mean, I think he used to take a... we had a palm tree in the front of our house that he used to break those palm fronds off and shave off those spines or whatever they were. And he would have basically a big, thick ruler-type switch that he'd go after my brother with. And so Dara decided one day, I don't know when, he said, I'm going to go and I'm going to prove to this turd what kind of a man I am. If he thinks he's such a man, I'm going to show him. So he went to San Diego. He enlisted in the United States Navy. And not only did he go through boot camp, he then applied and was accepted to submarine school in Connecticut. I don't know what the hell the town was. Is there a town in Connecticut called New London, Connecticut, or something like that? You guys live in Connecticut, you know probably where it is, but it was in Connecticut. It's where Dara went to submarine school. And while he was there, to qualify for sub school, it isn't just academic shit. You have to show a physical aptitude. You have to have a physical requirements, and they're not easy. You're put in a pressurized tank. You have to swim through a tube filled with water almost to the very top. The only room you have for it is your nose. You have to learn how to dive or jump into burning water. I mean, where there's oil that's on fire. And all of the shit he went through. And then, obviously, learning to the technical aspects of a sub. And Dara graduated and got what they call your when you get into the subs, you get your dolphins, twin dolphins. They give you a pin, and they're two dolphins. And he served aboard a United States nuclear submarine, the SS Barb. Okay? And I know my dad well enough, because I saw him do this, that that was not going to be good enough for him. And what my brother should have done is told my father to stick it up his ass and to have left and gone away forever. But poor Dara, like most kids that are not treated well, he wanted his father's respect and his love. You know? And but he spent his 4 years in the U.S. Navy serving with distinction, and he could be proud of that. And I think that that was it was probably the high point of my brother's life. I love my brother very much, and he's a very talented guy, but he had a tough life, you know. And I think Dara, I think he let at some point, you know, you have to let this shit go, man. You have to just say, you really do. If you're still hung up about your childhood to the extent that I can't do this because my dad treated me bad, and you're like in your 50s, you really need to get some either professional help or just run your head through a concrete wall or something, or, you know, hit yourself with a hammer. Get that kicking machine that farmer had in the cartoons. you know what I mean? I know you do, but I know you. Of course you do. Of course you do. That's Daniel Day-Lewis in There Must Be or There Will Be or There Could Be Blood. Forget the name of the movie. But I it used to piss me off when I was a kid. I was only about 10 years old, but I would see my brother come home from the Navy for he'd have a weekend of liberty. Now, most guys would stay in San Diego and get hammered, get a tattoo, find a girl, but my brother Dara dutifully would come back up to L.A., and he'd see his mother and his father. And there he would be standing. My dad would be sitting there next to our pool, and he would be ripping into my brother. And you know, you don't write your mother. Here he is at our house. Like I said, he could be down there having a ball, man, you know, just hanging with his friends and whatever. But he came up, and there's my old man ripping him an ass. If it was me, I know what I would have done, because I did it years later in my own life. I would have told him to stick it. I would have said, you know what, pal, you effed your life up, and good for you, and, you know, thank you very much to the extent that you raised me, which, of course, was your legal obligation, so I'm not giving you any special brownie points for that, Charlie, okay? You understand? You know, you went to a Catholic school. Yeah, well, that ain't no great shakes either. But gee whiz, Dad, thanks a lot for that. Oh, yeah, by the way, you didn't pay my tuition my senior year, so I had to, you know, go to public school. But it's okay. It's all good, you know. Because when I finally had that talk with my dad, and I had it, and every young man, not every young man, but any young man who wants to get out from under all that bullshit, you know, where you're spending about 10 years, the first 10 years of your adult life, you are... You know, you're arguing with this guy, whether he's there or not. You know, you're arguing with this guy, or you're dreaming about beating the shit out of him. I used to have dreams of beating the hell out of my dad, and I came to find out from the dream experts, or so they claim to be, that that's kind of you trying to make an emotional connection with somebody, you know, if it's not something that represents you. You know, sometimes people in our dreams represent an aspect of us. So maybe I was beating the shit out of myself. I don't know what I was doing. But anyway, he pissed me off. But I did eventually say to him, I told him exactly what I thought. And that's something that I had to do. It's something I felt I needed to do. And it was the right thing to do. It was absolutely the right thing to do. My brother never did that. He could never bring himself to do that. And Dara, as a result, had a tough life. So he is now in his early 70s. He has just come through something, man, that I got to put all the credit with my older sister, Joanne. I got to put a lot of credit with my younger sister, Marianne. I had no idea what was going on. I know that he had been sick, but I didn't know how sick he was. He's diabetic, and he almost lost his leg and all kinds of bullshit. And the next thing I know, when I go to see him, they go, well, you go see Dara. He's at the hospital. I go, okay. We drive over there on a Saturday. I walk up there. The guy's like got he's got a tube down his throat, and I mean, the last time I saw anybody like that was my father, just before he died. And there's my brother at the same age, and I couldn't believe it, you know. So I said hello to him, and he said, you know, he recognized me. And I said, what the hell happened to you, man? And I was kidding, and he's like, oh, go, go, go. I said, well, you got a tube in your throat, so you can't say anything, Darius. So you just have to shut up, man. But seriously, I was like, Jesus, this is really jacked up, man. The guy had, his lungs were gone, man. And they said to me, he was on a respirator, and the respiratory therapist said to me, well, you know, your brother's lungs are not doing any work at all, man. I said, I understand. Well, that sucks. He was a cigarette smoker. Yeah. My brother smoked up until, you know, he probably was still smoking when they brought him to the hospital, for all I know. There was that. He had an infection. His diabetes almost took his leg. He had something that happened. His heart stopped twice. Code blue, man. He literally, his heart stopped twice. This dude should have been dead. He should have been dead. At one point, we had the discussion. I talked to my sisters, and Joanne said to me, and God bless her, man, she said, I think Dara's going to be fine. I think, he's gonna hang in. All we have to do is just be there for him. My younger sister was more like, you know, sometimes you have to let people go. You know, I got kind of a hippie sister. Both of them are sort of hippies, but Marianne's sort of a hippie. Sometimes you just have to let them go. Maybe he wants to go. I don't know. But anyway, I'm not trying to make fun, Marianne, if you listen to this, but you know what I mean. So I said to her, look, Joanne's the older sister. She'll make the decision. Make a long story short, because I don't want to spend all bloody time on this. This cat, Dara, this guy I'm talking about, my bro, he is pulling through. He's pulling out. I mean, that sounded like he was like on a train to Yuma. You know, he's pulling out. I mean, the engine is full steam and he's leaving. No, he's getting it done. He's going to be okay. I mean, how okay? I don't know. I mean, he was messed up. And in order for him to get off this respirator and in order for him to have a semi-normal life, you know, we had to, they were going to give him a tracheotomy, and they asked Dara, and he nodded yes, he wanted that. So later on, I was talking to him, he says to me, you know, and he was whispering because he had this thing in his throat. He says to me, why didn't you guys just let me go? Meaning, why didn't we just let him die? I said, because you said, you nodded up and down, man, when they said, do you want to have a tracheotomy? And you went, yes. So it's on you, man. No. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Otherwise, I would have, yeah. You know, I didn't say that, but I probably should have jokingly said to him, otherwise, you bet, Jack, I would have pulled that plug, man. Which I guarantee you, somewhere along the line, he'd understand. But, this dude, I mean, he's like talking, he's eating, he's going in for therapy. He's going to be, he's got another chance, man. I hope that he, I don't know, I hope he really can rock and roll with that thing. I really do. Because but you know what, Dara's, he knows what he wants out of his life. You know, who says you got to do any, you don't have to do jack shit if you don't want to do it. You know, if you don't want to live, you don't have to live. You know, God knows, There's all kinds of music playing somewhere upstairs or something. Man, what is it? I mean, God knows, like I said, the guy had a life that, you know, only he can describe. So I would say that, you know, he's got another chance at this thing. And if he wants to rock and roll, he's got a brother and two sisters that are just perfectly fine. And it's all going to be good, you know. And he's got some cousins in Canada that want to know what's up. And, you know, my cousins right now were just, I just got the email from, or actually got a Franny's my cousin. She goes, oh, we're just excited about the Blue Jays. How about those Dodgers? I said, yeah, well, they suck. She's, oh, well, that's, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. So anyway, this is our Phil Only Monday podcast. We have our, as you know, Classic Fridays. Last Friday, we did Kenny Slagg. Kenny Slagg is a, I don't know what he is, a Principles of Abundance of the 21st Century. That's Kenny. And if you missed it, you should listen to it, because Kenny's philosophy is the following thing. If you can't master the principles of abundance of the 21st century, perhaps you can give Kenny's book to a friend of yours who might get it. But remember, if nothing else, you can be happy for Kenny and the fact that he's a multimillionaire. So check that out. That's the Principles of Abundance of the 21st Century, Kenny Slagg. And that was last Friday's Classic Friday. All right, so what else, man? So here's what was happening in Ventura, and I wanted to talk to you, or I wanted to just lay this on you because I found it interesting. Here in the city of Ventura, California, the El Pacifico, where we live here just north of Los Angeles, is a mission, and this mission was founded by a man by the name of Junipero Serra. There's about 9 missions in the state of California that were founded by this guy. And they had a protest there on Sunday. Native Americans were there, and they said, we're protesting Junipero Serra being canonized, and that's when you become a saint. You know, this Pope Francis made this guy, Junipero Serra, a saint. And we're protesting this cat, and they said, well, why? And they said, because this guy, Junipero Serra, was a part of a system of essentially robbing the culture of the native people from them and oppressing them. And starting these missions were these headquarters. They were places that the Catholic Church and quite frankly, the Spanish military and the civilized people of the world of Europe that came to California. These were the places where they could go and find sanctuary. And these were the places where they would go and find soldiers and guns and stuff. And these were also places where the native people were brought and taught Christianity. And given clothes to wear, and basically they tried to westernize them, you know. Now, one of the things that Magellan found out, and I guess the Spanish didn't get it, or maybe they did, maybe they figured it out as time went on. Magellan, back in the 16th century, sailed around the world, as you probably know. One of the places he stopped was the Philippines, and this was where he would meet his end. Because Magellan, you know, world traveler though he may be, I guess didn't get people all that well. Maybe he thought Indians were different, or the Filipino natives were different. I don't know what. But what happened was this. Magellan got on shore there in the Philippines, and he did the whole thing that all those guys do. He had the big cross, and I now claim this for Spain. You know? And all the Indians are there going, well, that's great. Welcome. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, as you know, we'd like you all to become subjects of King so-and-so. And on top of that, we'd like you to learn Christianity. Okay, sure. Now, why do you suppose they're doing that? Well, there's a couple of reasons. One of the fact that the Spanish have these cannons and these guns and all kinds of stuff that they can really do some damage with. But there's another even more compelling reason why these Indians are going, yeah, you bet. You know, what else do you need? Well, we'd like you to become Christians, and we want you to wear these clothes, put on this jock strap, put on these shoes, put on this hat. Sure, yeah, what else? There's a reason why they're doing that, because the Spanish had all this good shit. They had food, and they had gunpowder. Gunpowder was highly, highly valued. Highly valued by the native peoples of Polynesia, Micronesia, etc. The so-called non-European, the non-aligned states back then. They loved that gunpowder. They wanted that. Why? Well, there was something going on. And nowadays, of course, there's a school of thought that, you know, we got to grow up a little bit and recognize something. Even though the white man hadn't arrived yet, yeah, they were still having wars with each other, okay? So let's just, you know, grow up. I'm not saying that we didn't brutalize the hell out of those people, but, you know, they were already at war with each other. You know, they're already at war with each other. There's the, you know, the whole thing about the beachcombers, you know, the European beachcombers. These are guys that are shipwrecked Europeans. They knew about weapons. They knew about gunpowder. And so they sold their knowledge to the different chiefs of the islands. And they became very valued and very highly placed friends of the chief. This white man, he knows about guns. He knows about gunpowder. He can repair those weapons. There's the story of one particular English beachcomber where the chief said, I've got all these guns I need repaired. Repair them. Either that, or you went into a pot and they ate you. Literally. You could either help them, you could either show your value and your worth, or you're tonight's, you know, blue plate special, man. I'm sorry, but... And this guy didn't know what he was going to do because he had these guns to repair, but he didn't have any parts for the guns. He didn't have any replacement parts until he remembered that he'd been inside their temple. And they had worshipped these weapons. They had used these weapons as talisman. They'd used these weapons as small trinkets of devotion and, you know. And he went, I'm going to go sneak in. He goes, you couldn't go in there in the daytime. They put a spear through you if you went into the sacred lodge. But at night, there was nobody around. He snuck in. He grabbed what he needed from these weapons, took them back, and used the replacement parts to fix the guns. Okay? So by the time Magellan got to the Philippines, the knowledge of gunpowder, not necessarily the use of it or the execution of it, or the, but the knowledge of the gunpowder was there, and man, they want that. Magellan didn't get that at all. He wasn't too bright. The Spanish weren't all that bright, to be honest with you, nor neither were the Portuguese. Not at that particular time, because they saw these people dressed in loincloths and stupid-looking shoes, and they thought, well, these idiots are going to, this is going to be great. And he found out different, because what happened was the following thing. Magellan got over there, and he said, you are now all people that are, you know, you're groovy, and you're with Jesus. Yeah, sure. And you're, well, what do you mean, yeah, sure? Well, I mean, let's talk turkey here, man. Well, what are you talking about? I thought you loved God, and we love God to a point, but you happen to have some stuff here. Now, let's get straight. There's a king over here. Well, yeah, I know about him, and we need help, because what would happen, the Spanish would ally themselves with a certain chieftain. Well, he wasn't the only one, especially the Philippines. You had a multitude of these chieftains that ran these different islands and different sections of the islands. So Magellan had an argument with these guys, man, and essentially said, well, no, I won't. And you're going to have to start worshiping Jesus a little bit better than you do. And then maybe, just maybe, and I'm simplifying this, and I'm sure that there's a historian listening or someone who's probably more familiar, you know, essentially can tell the story much better, but essentially is what happened. This European landed there and said, here's how it's going to be. And they said, well, no. Well, it was cool about a year ago when I came. That was a year ago, Jack. And we did all that shit that you wanted us to do, and we're putting on these weird headdress, and we're the cross. That, good for you. But the fact is, they would still go back and have their native sort of animist and pagan rituals, and that kind of pissed him off, and that pissed the priest off. He'd say, well, I don't understand. Why are these people doing this? And Magellan would say to them, I guess they're lying to me, so let's get a few more and kick their ass and beat them and torture them or something, whatever you did in those days to get them to really heal too. But they, you know, finally they'd had enough of Magellan. They put a spear through his ass. You're not going to come along with us in these things that we have to do, like, you know, Joe Pesci there in Casino? Are you going to come with me in these things that I have to do? You're not going to come with us in these things we have to do, Magellan? No, I'm not. Okay. Put the spear right through his ass. This happened a lot. Down through the many centuries, the Europeans didn't really get, didn't quite understand the protocol. You know, happened to James Cook in Hawaii when he decided he'd take a hostage because one of his landing craft had been stolen. And the Hawaiians were, I guess, not pussies like the Tahitians. The Tahitians would just, you know, roll over and, you know, cut you another slice of watermelon. Just, hey, man, it's all good, you know. But the Hawaiians, no thank you, my man. You know, we're going to take it out of your ass. Well, now we come here to California, and Junipero Serra is now here, and this is now the 18th century. We're not in the 16th anymore. It's 200 years later. But here comes Junipero Serra, and maybe they're a little bit smarter. I don't know, but he puts these missions in California. San Diego, Monterey, San Francisco, I forget which others, but one of the last, and in fact, the last that Junipero Serra established was our Ventura mission right here. It's not more than 4 or 5 miles north of our studios here. It's right in the downtown section of Ventura. It's very scenic. It's very pretty. People go there, and you can go to Mass there on Sunday, and it's right on the main drag there in the little village. And on Sunday, the native people here in California, the Chumash Indians, went there to protest. And I was thinking about it because I've had a belief, and I always will hold this belief, that what happened to the native people in America and what happened to native people around the world, what happened, in other words, to weaker societies, is they got subsumed, they got consumed by stronger societies. That's been the way of the world. That's just the way it's been. You know, you can talk about racism, this and all this bullshit. It really is bullshit, because it isn't so much that, I mean, maybe in the minds of these people, well, we're better, we're white. That's possibly what they're thinking. But the fact of the matter is, it was going on among societies everywhere. black against black, brown against brown, white against white. Now, I know I'm saying a lot of stuff that a bunch of racist assholes listening will go, aha, see, Henry's saying it. Now I'll go ahead and write that on Twitter. But they're idiots. They're never going to understand. And you're never going to give the right answer to people like that anyway, man. They're always going to be looking for the right answer. You can give them the truth. That isn't enough for them. They want the right answer. The right answer is a white man's superior, right? No, that's not the right answer. The right answer is the white man collected in Europe. And because there was a competition for resources, he had to develop all kinds of technologies and weapons and bureaucracies to compete for those resources. And because all those resources were there, he had more children. And so there were a lot more people. And they began to bust out at the seams. And they needed to find another place to live. And they got other ships and they came over to North America. Well, how come the natives were so inferior? Because they didn't need any of that shit. That's why. They didn't need cannons. What are they going to do with a cannon? They didn't even, you know, the nearest tribe, you couldn't even see the guy, man. They had thousands of square miles of land. They didn't even need to become farmers. They were still hunter-gatherers out on the western edge of the North American continent because the game was plentiful. There weren't that many people. Yeah, they knew farmers. They knew the native people that had begun to farm along the Mississippi River and so forth. But that was their thing, and our thing out here in the West is we will continue to hunt and gather because that's cool, and we like it, and there's plenty of buffalo. Then the white man gets here and destroys all of that. Now, do I blame the white man for that shit? No, I don't, because I know the reality of how societies develop, how civilizations progress, how this world came to be. And it is a fact, whether you're a white man in a brown man's land or a brown man in a smaller brown man's land or whatever you want to call it, stronger societies always consume weaker societies. Now, I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. A few years ago, something fascinating happened. You probably saw it. A helicopter was flying over a certain part of the jungle of Brazil. And what did they see? They saw below them a sight that I don't think Western man has seen for many, many, many years, maybe hundreds of years. Below them were four or five warriors painted orange and black, staring up at this helicopter with their spears at the ready. They were warriors, and they saw this helicopter, and they didn't know what the hell it was, and they weren't about to ask. They'd sent the women and the children into the interior of the jungle or wherever you send the women and children when you're about ready to deal with a threat, and they were ready to take on whatever it was. You could see three warriors that were painted orange. You saw, obviously, some sort of a shaman or a chief who has had some white powder on him. And we were looking into the face of ourselves, if you want to get right down to it, about 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 years ago. It was a mindfucker. And I was fascinated, and it blew me away. Now, Brazil, as does the rest of the developed world, has a protocol. The United Nations follows this protocol, and that is, it's something along the lines of the non-interference directive that they have on Star Trek. You know, like, oh, we will not interfere with them. Okay? What they did do is they said, no more logging in that section of the forest, no more building in this airstrip. I think they were working on a couple of things, and they said, it all ends, it ceases, that's the end of that, baby. Why? Because these people are there, and we don't want to screw with their lives. But nobody ever answered this question. I had this question, and I guess I didn't ask the right people. I said, now, wait a second, because what happened there was they saw something, right? And yeah. And that evening in the council or in the lodge or wherever they sit, there's going to be a young person or just one of the people is going to say, well, what is that? And one of the elders who's obviously seen it before will say, don't even worry about it. It's bad, man. It is bad. What? Those people in that helicopter are bad news. They will kill us. They'll destroy everything. I saw it happen. Well, are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. Well, I knew a guy, Billy Simpson, you know, he went, oh, forget him. No, he went swimming and he saw them and they were really nice to him and they played basketball, kinds of shit. Oh, he's a lion sack of crap. This is the conversation that was going to take place there. Now, I ask anybody the following question. How do you deal with that? If you don't want those people affected by us, how do you deal with the fact that they're curious about us, that they want contact, that there's some people in that tribe that want to talk to us? They want to see that big goddamn whatever that was. They asked a guy, an older man from one of those Stone Age tribes eventually, what did you think that was when he first saw a helicopter? He said, I thought it was a giant insect.
He said, I thought it was a gigantic insect. I didn't know what the hell it was. So how do you talk to the, what do you say to a kid who says, well,
we don't want to have any contact with you people. You know, well, no, but I want to have contact with you. Well, no, you don't.
Yes, I do. What do you mean, no, I don't? Yes, I do. You got helicopters and shoes. You got a lot of stuff that I want to see, okay? I don't want to be sitting here gnawing on tree bark, if you don't mind. I'd like to go out now, and I want to see. What do you do about that? See, the point I'm making here is it isn't cut and dried, man. It's not something where you go, look, we came in, and it was all bad bullshit because stronger societies are always looking for resources. Stronger. I didn't say smarter, folks. There's a big difference between strong and smart. Big difference. Native Americans, if you want to talk about being primitive, within I don't know how many generations, Native Americans mastered the use of the horse and they mastered the white man's firearms enough to defeat the United States 7th Army in wherever the hell it was. What was it? Little Bighorn. So, you see, now a simple-minded, dumbass racist tells you this. He says, yes, you know, they're able to mimic the white man's behavior. No, if you know anything about anthropology, which you don't because you're stupid, you realize that man, the human animal himself, is very adaptable. When he needs something, he learns how to use it, or he invents it, and he moves on. He will either invent it, or he'll blueprint it from another society, or he'll copy aspects of it and create his own based upon that blueprint. There's only three ways that we get things in this world. There's only three ways that things have ever been developed. They were either spontaneously invented by a society, they were blueprinted, or they were copied off of that blueprint and adapted to the needs of those people. That's how it happens. That's how farming happened. That's how the development of weapons happened. It's everything. Native people never needed firepower like that. They never needed horses. What did they need it for? The wars that they fought, the battles they had, the technology of the bow and arrow, the spear, that sufficed. Maybe they used some sort of a slingshot. I don't know. But they never had to develop beyond that because they didn't need it. There's, you know, the saying that necessity is the mother of invention. That's what it means. It means you don't invent anything until you need it. Well, see, we got horses, and we have cannons, and the Indians, they ain't got shit. That must mean they're dumb. No, it means they lived a completely different life from the one that we've lived. They didn't need to have all these wars because, first of all, they weren't crammed together like a bunch of goddamn sardines like we are in Europe. They're not fighting for resources at every brook and at every river and at every stream like we are. They don't have as many people because we're eating our asses off and we're making babies like it's going out of style. And we're, you know, all kinds of shit was happening in Europe. We had to build castles to keep people out. We had to, you know, there's a lot there was a lot of bureaucracy. There was a lot of population and all the things that come from population, eventually religion, because you have leisure, because you have time to sit and think and stare at the stars and do all this other jazz. Native people, they didn't need it because they were spread out over this enormous, vast expanse of the two continents. So anyway, I'm digressing here, but I had this thing I was thinking about this weekend. I look at California, and I see Father Junipero Serra. And I go, Father Serra was putting these places there. And he was doing what a stronger society does. Now, you may say, but what about a moral society? Well, okay, isn't that nice? Yes, you're right. But morality is a very relative thing when we talk about time. And I'm not going to go back to the 18th century and judge a man during those times based upon my comfortable morality today. No one would. If you put you and me in the 18th century right now, we would be acting just like Junipero Serra. We can't sit there and stroke our own asses and say, you know, if I went back in those days, I would not be as violent. And I would be, yeah, yes, you would. Yeah, you would. You'd be worse because you wouldn't know how to react at all. Oh, yeah. So I'm not going to sit here and look back at those people and say, what a bunch of lowlifes. They were acting the way you acted in the 18th century. I'm doing you a favor, man. I'm bringing you God. So they say, well, Phil, how does that work with your philosophy that when Junipero Serra did what he did, which was to essentially rob the culture of the native people, which he did do, and he essentially subjugated them and inflicted physical punishment on them
He did. I mean, you know, Catholic priest though he may be, and a canonized priest though he may be, he stood by and watched as those people were physically abused, because this was essential for their conversion to Christianity. What do you think of that, Phil? I think that it was a time that we'll never understand. And like the man said, the past is like a foreign country. They just do things differently there. Now, should he be canonized because of what we know today about him? I don't think so. I mean, because that's something that we're saying now. You know, we're looking back and we're making that judgment from where we are today. Now, that we can do. I don't mean that we vilify the man and say that he is a piece of shit and that he doesn't deserve to be taught in our schools. He shouldn't be in our history books. But canonization is a really heavy thing in Catholicism. It means that you have, it means that you are as close to God to the point where miracles are performed as the result of your existence and presence. You know, miracles, man. Like you can save someone's life. You can save someone's life, man. Yeah, but no. You know what I mean? You can save his life. You know. So, you know, that there's that. And so I would say, me, I would have a hard time with that. But I'm not going to look back and say, what a piece of shit. And the native people, and I had this conversation with Russell Means. Was it Russell Means? I think it was. I interviewed him on my show years ago, and I said, you know, Mr. Means, native people before the white man got here were at war with each other. No, they weren't. And I knew enough about Russell Means, I wasn't going to argue with him. Well, I'm not going to argue with a guy who is not going to. What are you going to do? All I'm going to do is get him pissed. I don't have the magic word. You know, I'm not so marvelous a guy as, yes, but. And then all of a sudden I laid this on him, and Russell Means, Native American, angry at what had happened to his culture, all probably already resentful of me because I'm a white man. Not, you know, he's not a racist. It's sort of the culture that I represent. I know, yeah, there's a lot of white people right now listening to this and say, oh, don't be a pussy, Phil. That's what he, oh, yeah, whatever, man. I don't, I'm not interested in you, man. I'm sorry. But in any event, I didn't have the words to say to him. So he said to me, no, they didn't. I said, okay. No, they didn't. I don't believe that. I don't agree with him, and I didn't say that. You know, he knew where I was coming from, you know. He was buying into something that was completely fantastical. He was buying into this. Allegedly, there were the remains of a native man found that were some 300,000 years old and represented some kind of native settlement or establishment. Now, 300,000 years ago, we were not even, I don't think we were modern man yet. We were, I don't know what we were, Cro-Magnon or something? I don't think we'd actually, the physiognomy had not, you know, evolved to where we are today. But nonetheless, there was a, you know, the Neanderthal were, you know, doing their little thing. They were, the Neanderthal were burying their dead. They had some basic shit, but this cat, he was buying into some stuff that was, to be perfectly honest with you, it was like pseudoscience. It wasn't really, and I don't think it's ever really been proved, but that's where he was coming from. You know, he believed the racial view, and I suppose it's true, that the white man is essentially an evil motherfucker, because, excuse my French, but because we kill and we maim and we destroy. And you know, and yeah, that's what we did do. That's what we did. Reason why I don't think that's racist, necessarily, is because we learned. You know, I mean, we learned. And while at the time, yeah, okay, we thought we were racially superior, what we were doing wasn't really being driven by racism. It was being driven by what people all over the world do when they're looking for more resource, when they're looking for more places to, you know, to expand to live. Now, some people might say the following. Yeah, what about Hitler and that Lebensraum? I guess he was doing the right thing, huh, Phil? No, because Hitler was a complete and utter moron. He didn't need more living space. There weren't enough Germans to move out into Poland, man. When he took over all that, he was talking about living space because Hitler wanted the German nation to grow fat and big and fantastic, because that was some psychedelic fantasy he had, you know, probably from masturbating too much or eating or taking all those drugs that Dr. What's-His-Ass was giving him. By the time they took over all that land in the East and that Hitler wanted all that living space, there weren't any German families to send out there. He didn't have enough people. Because he didn't understand. Hitler misread history. He misread culture. He misread battle tactics and war and politics. He didn't know a goddamn thing about anything. All he knew was how to scare people. He was good at bullying and bravado. That was what he was good at. He was good at bullshit. You know, that cat was the best at just bullshitting somebody. But he'd stare you in the eye and bullshit you into thinking that he had, you know, a nuclear bomb in his back pocket. When push came to shove and he had to prove it on the, you know, in the arena of either politics or warfare or whatever, he didn't have it, man. He was a flop and a failure from the minute that guy got challenged. I'm not saying when he was sitting there in Germany on his ass and he was making Volkswagens and everybody thought he was the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm talking about when he finally got challenged, when people finally said, okay, we're calling you on your bullshit now and we'll go toe-to-toe with your ass and we'll see what you're made of. He got his ass kicked. I'm talking about the actual fact of human evolution and where we go. What we need, we go find. Or we invent. And we go from there. And we run afoul of each other when we do that. And sometimes we're pissed off, and sometimes we're benevolent. And sometimes we beat the shit out of a culture, and we kill, and we commit genocide, and we learn from that. And we go, well, let's not do that anymore. Why? Well, that's a terrible way of doing things. Look what we did. You know. Sometimes we intermarry with the people that we conquered. The Spanish did that. Sometimes we don't. The English wouldn't have anything to do with intermarrying with native or inferior people. Does that make the Spanish better than the English? I don't know. It just the Spanish were hell-bent on converting as many people as they could find to Catholicism. Because there was a war going on between the Catholicics and the Protestantics, you know. Something like that. So anyway, this weekend we had all of our native friends, the Chumash people, up there protesting in Ipro Serra. And so I found myself, what am I doing? What am I thinking about here? Because I took California history in college, the little bit of college that I went to, and I particularly was fascinated with the story of the forming the missions. And I thought that they're right, that it was messed up the way he did things. It was terrible. And the Chumash culture was destroyed. But it was going to go south anyway. It didn't have any prayer in hell of survival. No native culture in the 18th century North America with the white man making his move had any chance of survival at all. So forget it. And it has nothing. While there were racist people afoot, no question. No question. Those people were driven, in their minds they were racist, but they were driven by a historic movement that has moved man since the beginning, and that was the need to subsume weaker, absorb, and continue to grow and continue to push out. That just happens no matter what the society. White, black, yellow. That's the way of the world, baby. And one of these days, I think they're telling me we're going to go off this planet, right? Are we going to go to what, Mars? That's what they say, because they got water up there. Well, why do we don't have to go to Mars? Yeah, we do. Why? We're going to outgrow this planet. We got plenty of goddamn room here. Well, we do. There's all kinds of... Now, well, let's go to Mars anyway, because we'll have that discussion. Well, I don't want to go to Mars. Well, all right, then you can stay here. And we're going to take all this shit with us, and you won't have anything left. Well, I guess I have to go now. Yeah. You're going to leave me with nothing? Well, we need it up there. I don't want to go to Mars. We've got plenty of... You say what you want to say. Do what you want to do, man. We're leaving. We're going to Mars. There may not be any reason to go to Mars. We may just go to Mars now because it's there. But whatever it is, and for whatever reason, mankind... And generally, the growth on this planet was because of all of that need for expanse, that the need for resource, the need to find other areas to exploit and to capitalize on. That's why we went to North America. Let's get the hell out of Europe, man. All these wars, all this battle, all this plague, all these assholes. Let's get out of here, man. And they sure did. And that's what I have to do right now. So I'm going to leave you guys. I appreciate it very much that you have joined me for this. This is the Phil Only Podcast, and it's a fun time for me, I'll tell you that, and I appreciate you guys just hanging with me and listening to what it is that I've got to say. I would suggest if you don't have your backstage pass to our website, would support our website by getting a backstage pass and listening to what we have got, you know. And for those of you who do, as I mentioned, the Milwaukee Lions have dropped against the Tucson Tequila, and all kinds of stuff, man, all kinds of things floating and flying into our archives. Our show is executive produced by myself, Phil Hendry, for Siempre Incorporated. All rights reserved on the great people at Podcast One. Bye, guys. See you tomorrow.